You're listening to the Local Open Mic Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Heath, and welcome to Season 3. Today we talk with Eric Ramsey. Eric is an artist that got his start later in life. It wasn't until his wife told him to go for it that he mustered the courage to begin his musical journey. That was 7 years ago. And in that time, Eric has performed all around the country, found success in the music industry and competitions, like his recent showing at the International Blues Challenge in Memphis, Tennessee, where he won the solo duo category. It doesn't end there, though. He also won the Memphis Cigar Box Guitar Award for the best guitarist in the solo duo category. And, if that wasn't enough, he won the People's Choice Award at the Wildflower Arts and Music Festival Al Johnson Performing Songwriter Contest. His music is a combination of blues and folk and country music with lyrics penned from his own experience. We'll hear three of his songs and their backstories, so stay with us as we talk with a very fascinating man, an artist, in Eric Ramsey. And we have with us today Eric Ramsey. This is our second go with this interview. The first one was fraught with technical issues on my side. I think we've solved them all. It is so good to see you again. How are you doing?
Hi, Tim. I'm great, thank you. And it's nice to see you again, too.
Oh, good, good. So just so the fans will hear it, you came on my radar because of Josie Bello, and you played on a project of hers, did very well, and she thought the world of you and recommended you. So I finally reached out to you. You're down in the Phoenix, Arizona area, generally speaking.
Right.
At the time of this recording, I happen to be in Tucson, so we're not really all that far, but going out the door and shouting the interview was unacceptable. So
yeah, the HOA doesn't ratify that kind of behavior around here.
Well, my HOA only cares about the front yard, not who yells out the front door. You know, and that says something about us, right? We're at that age where every place we live, we have an HOA to deal with.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. It's worse. They're awful. They're full of folks that don't have anything better to do. Well, you know.
Yeah. All our kids are living in places that their biggest problem is the neighbor going to put a couch out on their front yard as lawn furniture, you know, so.
I was that neighbor at one point in my life.
I got to tell you, I was never that neighbor. I had stuff in the backyard that might have been questionable, but it never made it to the front.
So, oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, let's talk about you. For your fans to hear it, you're coming fresh off a trip to Memphis. Tell us about that trip to Memphis.
I was in Memphis. My wife and I, actually, she was able to accompany me. We were in Memphis last week for the International Blues Challenge. And I was, I won our local competition here in Phoenix. And so as a result, got to go to Memphis to represent the Phoenix Blues Society in this International Blues Challenge. And so that's where we were. And son of a gun, if I didn't win the thing.
Wow. That's cool. And how do you win cool. something like that? I mean, music is such a subjective thing. Did winning mean that more people bought your music there? Or?
No, that really doesn't have anything to do with it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Everyone that was entered, there were, I'll backtrack a little bit. There were two categories. There's a solo/duo category, which is the one that I was in. And then there was a band category as well. And the competition started on a Friday with what they called quarterfinals. So I and everybody else in my category played a 25-minute set before three judges and a crowd that were gathered at the venue where I played. They had, I think, maybe six different venues for our solo duo category. So each venue hosted a quarterfinal, and there were, I think, five, six people in at my venue. And we each played a 25-minute set for these judges. You're timed. Your presentation is judged on musical ability, on relating to the crowd, on composition, theoretically, although there were plenty of people that played just cover songs. Originality and your ability to manage 25 minutes of time.
Because yeah, if you go exactly.
Over long, if you go over, you lose points. So I played a quarterfinal on Friday, quarterfinal in on Saturday, and then I was fortunate to get through to the semifinals, where they winnowed the group down by about less than half, probably. We then played a 30-minute set for three new judges, and I was fortunate to win my semifinal and go into the finals, where there were five of us from the group, five of us competing in the final round. And we had a 20-minute set that night. So I happened to win. You know, they liked what I did, and I'm very fortunate. It could be a great career thing. It sort of depends on where I can take it from there. But yeah, it was a wonderful opportunity.
I've never been brave enough to enter competitions about my singing or my songwriting. Let me walk that back a little. One time, many years ago, in fact, it's when I lived in Phoenix, like a whole lifetime ago, I went to, my space in music is mostly gospel music. And I wrote some contemporary stuff. It was in the 80s, and I decided to show up for a songwriter competition slash critique slash, you know. And there were local people that were supposed to be, and I'm using air quotes here for the fans, experts in my genre of music. And needless to say, I brought my heavy-hitting song, the one that I knew was well-written, and you have to really be into the genre of the type of gospel music I was writing. It was music more pointed at people of the faith than, you know, trying to proselytize people, okay? It was not evangelical in nature. It was more teaching lessons, right? So, I did the song, and the first comment out of a guy, and I happened to know him, he was the son of a pastor in town of a very large church. Other than that, I have no idea what his credentials were, because I knew a little bit about him, and, you know, I was wondering why he was on this panel. And, of course, he was the first one to speak up, and he says, "Gosh, that's kind of an angry song." Well, you know, think of it like it was a Christian version of a protest song about, you know, behaviors and stuff. And yes, it was an angry song. No kidding. You got it, right? It went nowhere. And after that, I decided I don't need to put my songs in front of people like this to say, "Gosh, that was an angry song. What were you expecting?"
You know, I think I didn't know what to expect. And I went in there with no preconceptions either. I knew the songs I was going to play. I played the same songs every night. I did add a song for the semifinals because I had an extra 5 minutes. But I played the same set. They were strong. Songs I felt were strong that I had written and were also in the genre. And they were songs that I liked to play. So I just went in there and I did my Eric Ramsey thing, you know, and it happened to be what they wanted to hear. So now, I will say that for every person that that performed that didn't win, everyone thought they should have won, essentially. And I get that. Why enter a contest if you don't think you're going to win?
You know, if I were to do it, I would go in thinking, I'm just happy to be in front of a few people that I'd normally not be in front of. And honestly,
well, there's that too.
Winning it would never cross my mind until I got to, say, the semifinals, right? Mm-hmm. If I made it to the semifinals, well, then I'd go, yeah, okay, I could win this.
I try not to fall prey to hubris, you know, but I knew that I'm a comfortable performer, and I'm comfortable on stages from coffee houses to music halls. You know, I've played a lot of
sure.
those different places, and I'm comfortable on them. And I felt that if my songs were going to be as good as anybody else's, and if, again, as you say, it's so subjective, if they like you and like what you do, I figured I had as good a shot as anybody. And why not? Why not?
So nobody came up to you and said, gosh, Eric, that's an angry song.
No. They might have said it in a different way, and I wasn't listening.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, that's good. Hey, congratulations on the win. It's a great feather in the cap and a great resume builder for getting you to something that might further the career even more. So that's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell us what's coming on in the next year for you, what you have planned, any tours scheduled, stuff like that.
Yeah, I do have a couple of things. I'm leaving Thursday for Dallas. I'm actually in a festival there and a performing songwriters contest. I'm one of the finalists in Richardson, Texas. It's called the Wildflower Arts and Music Festival.
Wildflower.
Wildflower. And so I'll be there over the weekend. I'll come back and I have a tour plan that'll take me into Central Texas for a couple of weeks in the middle of June. And then I have another shorter tour in Colorado in like the middle of August. And one of the perks for winning this International Blues Challenge is a slot on the Legendary Blues Cruise, which is a cruise that leaves out of San Diego for 7 days. It's one of those immersive things, you know. There'll be, Taj Mahal has been and Keb Mo have been on it before, and it's kind of a who's who of West Coast, anyway, blues folks.
So
that'll be a great opportunity.
Just like that, you became a, what's it called again? A blues, the cruise.
The Blues Cruise, yeah.
The Blues Cruise. Well, you become famous very quickly. Very quickly. I've had family do a cruise. They did their family group did a Disney cruise through the Caribbean, and they really enjoyed it. They had a good time, and I've known other people that do cruises, and it takes a certain mindset to be on a cruise. If it's your first time, you just totally enjoy it. If it's about your fifth time, it's another day at the office.
Yeah, none of us have ever been on a cruise before, so I'm hoping my wife can join me. I don't know if she's going to want to or not. I don't know that she's cut out for the cruising life. I think it's an opportunity, as a professional opportunity, it's wonderful.
Good. That's wonderful. Let's get to your first song so we don't let this interview escape us with these great stories you have. Tell us about Did You Ever? What's the backstory to that? And, you know, dish it to us.
Well, it's not autobiographical, if that's what you're wondering, Tim. Of course, that's not entirely true. This song wrote itself in about 15 minutes. I was in Chicago, staying with an old college roommate of mine. And I'd gotten up early in the morning. I had some shows up there. And so I'd gotten up early, and I was sitting around noodling on the guitar. And I don't know where the phrase, did you ever, come from, but it popped into my head. You know, as a songwriter, sometimes that happens. And
exactly.
If you're open to it, sometimes the whole thing will just write itself, which this one did. And it was just a listing of bad behaviors that I claim that I'd only seen and documented, but it's maybe a little more autobiographical than I would like to admit. I'd come up with this sort of opening little riff on the guitar, and it just kind of fell into place.
Well,
it for my buddy, and he recognized some of the scenarios as something that he might have done, but not me.
No, you had him at that point. You could have said, well, to be perfectly honest, they were about you. Okay, let's get to that song. That is called Did You Ever?
Did you ever wake up in the morning and rub your aching head? Trying to remember just what you did, thinking you'd be better off dead. The light through the curtains hurt your eyes, and your bed won't stop its spin. So you add last night to the list of things you swear you'll never do again. You got home. Oh, you was having so much fun. When did things start to go wrong? You can't find your wallet, can't find your keys. Baby, you can barely find the door. So you add last night to the list of things you swear you won't do no more. Did you ever wake up in the morning? Can't remember her name. What seemed so appealing late last night, in the morning don't look the same. Did you ever suppose she just might be thinking the very same thing about you? You both add last night to the list of things you swear you'll never do. Took my own advice, I'd be sitting in the middle of the room on the floor. 'Cause everything I do today, the things I swore I'd never do no more. Yeah, everything I do today, a thing I swore I'd never do no more.
That's a fun song. This is about the third or fourth time I've actually listened to the whole thing, and I get a kick out of it every time. Such a good song.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We had one of those moments in our first recording of this interview with me having to contact you and say, that interview is unusable. Did you ever think that would happen? Well, there you go. There you go. Apropos. Very good song. I was thinking as I was listening to it, that is like an Arlo Guthrie thing all the way. You know,
I could
imagine him doing that. It's not quite Alice's Restaurant territory in the vibe, but I've seen Arlo play live and I've seen his son play live too. And, it's got a vibe that would work with them. So yeah, it's their kind of music, their style. And so congratulations on that. So let's talk about the last 5-7 years. I know, of course, from the first time we talked that you haven't actually been full-time in the music industry all that long. So tell us about that.
Right. I was very, very part-time for quite a while, a long time, actually. And about 6 years ago, I think, my wife gave me an opportunity to see where my music could go because she liked it. I was getting a little more local attention here. Before that, I was an electrician. Been an electrician and a part-time musician and a dad. Having given that opportunity by my wife, I've just tried to make the most of the time that I had available. It's humbling, you know, because there are a whole lot of people out there that are way better than I am, younger, their ceilings are non-existent, and they will never have, most likely won't have an opportunity that I've been given. So I take that responsibility very seriously.
Well, hey, good on you that you've done what you have. And so what has the last 7 years been like? What are so far, besides your recent Memphis thing, what are the high points and low points?
Let's see. It's been sort of a gradual ascension, honestly, since I started playing full time.
Well, that's never a bad thing, is it?
No, it's not, and I'm fortunate in that regard. Obviously, there was a big dip during the pandemic, as there was for everybody. Generally, I sort of set goals to have a new record by a certain point, or play a higher profile venues, or play more listening environments rather than clubs and coffee houses and things. And as I would set those goals, while it wasn't always linear, it was generally an upward trend, and so I feel very fortunate in that regard too, that I've been able to sort of realize some local success and then maybe some regional success and hopefully maybe a little more than that now. We'll see.
Wow. Well, that's just amazing. That's just amazing. So I'll tell you what, why don't we notch back farther. What got you involved in music in the beginning? Let's go back to your roots, right from the very beginning as a kid or as a teenager. Tell us about that.
I was aware of music from the time I was a little kid. I can remember being in church and my family all sang not in the choir. A couple of them sang in the choir, I guess, but aunts and uncles. But everyone would sing from the pews, you know, when the Psalms would come up. And I can remember sitting with my parents and my dad, I think he had a kind of a tenor voice. And my mom had probably an alto, but I would recognize that they were singing different parts of the same song and not knowing what they were doing. I knew it sounded good. I could hear the intervals and the way they worked. And I didn't know that they were intervals and I didn't know, you know, what they were supposed to be. But so I was aware of music from that, in that environment. We didn't really listen to a whole lot of music at home. I can remember maybe the neighbors having the country music radio, AM radio station on, you know, but we didn't listen to music as a family, as a thing that we did together. I did have a little monaural record player that would play, it could play 45s and it could play 33s. And at some point, I don't remember when, but at some point I ended up with some Beatles 45s. That must have been about sixth or seventh grade, something like that. And then eventually I discovered some records in our house that I had no idea we had, but apparently my mom was a Nat King Cole fan, and my dad kind of liked Roger Miller, although we never listened to him. So we had Roger Miller's greatest hits and
Nat King Cole. I'm a fan of both of them, by the way.
Me too. Me too. Yeah, so then, you know, I got my first guitar in probably seventh grade, I think, and because it became obvious that, well, girls became obvious about seventh grade, and then it became equally obvious that they liked guitars, so there was sort of a natural synchronicity there.
Yeah, it was tough to be a bass guitar player in seventh grade.
Well, but now you could work wherever you wanted to. It doesn't have the same stigma as it used to. Then I started messing around and learning some songs by ear, and I ended up being a member of our high school concert choir, and then the jazz ensemble. So I was exposed to more stuff then.
And what did you play in the jazz ensemble?
Didn't play, I just sang.
Oh, okay.
We had a basic backup. We had a paid pianist that was our primary accompanist, and there were a couple of students that played bass and guitar, but they didn't do much more than just sort of add some texture. But there were eight of us. There were four, eight or 16. An equal number of boys and girls, and we'd sing arrangements of jazz standards and pop songs and things like that. It was fun.
So when did you write your first song?
You know, I don't know. That's a great question. I think I wrote the first song that I would actually entertain playing for somebody about. Oh, geez. Maybe in the late 80s, something like that. And it wasn't very good.
Well, that puts you right on course with everyone else. First songs are, it's really tough to have a first song out of the gate that just hits on all cylinders.
Yeah. But I always would kind of scribble things down, and I'd make up stuff on the guitar, you know, and I think I really seriously started writing about 6 or 7 years ago, when I was given the opportunity to not get up at four and go schlep through people's attics and stuff all day long. And it was remarkable what happened when I was given that opportunity. I think I wrote what became my first record in about, it seems like 2 weeks. The songs just kept coming and coming and coming, and I almost couldn't get them down quickly enough. And it just was like a fountain had been turned on.
And what was the name of that album?
Called Wills and Won'ts.
Okay, and is that available on streaming sites?
Yeah, I think everything's available on streaming sites. And I know it's available. You can stream it from my website, if nothing else.
Okay.
You can also buy it on the website.
We'll put all that stuff in the show notes. But why don't you tell us what that site is now, rather than me asking later at the end?
Oh, okay. Well, it's ericramsey.net is the way you can find access to all that stuff.
Okay.
And my comings and goings, that kind of thing.
ericramsey.net. I love it. I use a lot of .nets also. So let's get to your other song, another one called Cocoon. Tell us the backstory to that.
I've been involved off and on for the last couple, 3 years in an online songwriters group. And we will occasionally do these songwriters challenges, we call them, and there'll be maybe a dozen of us involved, and someone will throw out a prompt for a song, and on a Sunday night, the prompt would come across our internet, and you'd have that following week to write a song using the prompt, either in the body of the song or as the title. And then you'd have to record a rudimentary version and post it on a SoundCloud site that everyone could access and then critique. So it's a wonderful learning experience. It was brutal, just brutal.
It's kind of an angry song, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. But at least they're not right in your face. Right?
Yeah. No, but, you know, if they post it on the internet, it is for all time.
It is true. So the prompt for this particular round was a Cocoon. And the song that I wrote was substantially different than a lot of the other offerings. A lot of the other writers came up with things about growth and metamorphosis and spreading your wings and, you know, emerging from a chrysalis and that kind of thing. And I wrote a song about a caterpillar who really doesn't like the world very much and refuses to leave his cocoon. So that's the backstory.
Yeah, you know, just the thought that people wrote the standard, all the usual suspects sort of things about cocoons, you went the other way with it. So it's definitely not a cliche at all, this song, where yeah. A lot of the, you know, you head in the other direction of, oh, I'm coming out, this is a great song, I'm changing my life, you know, which is kind of the essence of the, you know, becoming the butterfly. But it's songs like that, it's really hard to be original. I've heard so many songs similar to that, where you have an amazing change, like, and they always liken it to the butterfly. This song, though, is really good. Let's listen to it. It's called Cocoon.
Don't wanna be no butterfly. I don't wanna sprout no wings. Wanna stay here in my cocoon and think unhappy things. Don't wanna flutter around no sunny fields. I don't wanna ride no wind. Wanna stay here where I'm safe and warm. You all do what you intend. Your sky's so big and blue and wide. Oh, it scares the hell half out of me. I plan to stay right here inside. Why can't you all just let me be? I hang out with the beetles here. I hang out with the crickets too. So I'll just stay here near the ground if it's all the same to you. Nobody pays me any mind down here among the weeds. And here in my cocoon, I got all the friends I need. Your world goes by so fast. Oh, and it don't make no sense. Since I'm here all by myself, don't have to think in present tense. My view don't ever change, it's true. I done ate up all the scenery. Here in my cocoon, and none of that matters much to me. Don't wanna be no butterfly. No, I don't wanna sprout no wings. I'll just stay here where I'm safe and warm, and think my unhappy things right here in my cocoon. Just let me pupate here in peace, here in my cocoon. Why can't you all just let me be?
Amazing song. Good stuff.
It's a cheery one, isn't it? It's a cheery one.
Boy, that makes me want to go out and drink now. A good song. I mean, your style of folk, and that's what I think you like to be in. Is it blues or folk that you'd prefer to be known for?
I have a really hard time deciding, honestly, because there are aspects of it, of all of those things.
Yeah, like the first song, Did You Ever, definitely has a folk vibe to it. This sort of is a crossover. There's some folk to it, but it's really, you know, with that resonator guitar thing you have going and all, there's a bluesy, total bluesy vibe to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you there. There's definitely a bluesy vibe. It's a hard thing to categorize. You know, people ask me on occasion how I would describe my music, and it's kind of just, it's an amalgam of blues and folk and country rock and singer-songwriter stuff. I default to Americana because that's sort of the umbrella these days for things that don't fit into a specific genre.
You know, the whole genre of Americana is just huge in Europe. I was telling Josie that, the gal who referred you to me, and she has...
Hi, Josie.
Josie and the... No, we won't go there. I'm showing my age here, right? So I used to watch the cartoons.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right. Anyway, in Europe, it's pretty big. I talked with another gal we interviewed. Her name is Rosie Ban, and she was talking about it. And, you know, it just... This stuff, if it gets over to Europe, will really, I think, get a lot of traction. And, you know, Josie might even be able to help with that. She knows people.
And we know Josie.
If we know Josie, we know people. So, let's see. So tell us about, you know, on a personal side, you know, life, marriage, kids, things like that. Anything you want to just sort of free range it here?
Well, yeah, sure. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I have a wonderful wife. We've been married now. This will be our 11th year of marriage. We've been together 13. I was a single dad for 10 or 12 years before that, had gotten divorced right around 2000, I guess, is thereabouts. I have a son from a previous marriage who got married about a month ago.
Congratulations on a new family member.
Thank you. Yeah, he's a great kid. His wife is wonderful, and Marcy brought two daughters to our marriage, and they are both freshmen in college. They just finished their freshman years in college, and they're fine young women. We're kind of amazed because, you know, despite questionable parenting, the kids all seem to have turned out okay, and that's what you shoot for.
Yeah, I got accused a lot of questionable parenting at times.
Yeah, it's the eye roll, right? Yeah, the eye roll. Oh my God!
You did what? Is that an age-appropriate gift to give your daughter? I love those kinds of comments. And there's songs there. I got to tell you, there's all kinds of songs about questionable parenting that turned out okay. So,
right.
Yeah. So, well, congratulations on the new family member and, you know, all of that. And the kids that became part of the, you're the bonus dad to these girls, you know.
I'm the bonus dad.
Yeah. I have.
I hated to
say stepdad. You know, I've been married, you know, a couple previous times. I'm, of course, the marriage I have now is wonderful. And I remember deciding that I didn't like the term stepdad. So I wanted to be the bonus dad. You know, somebody that was thought of as an asset to have as a father and not necessarily a replacement for somebody's father. So, good bonus dad.
That's great. That's great. That's a nice way to look at it. Yeah, I've been fortunate to be around such wonderful kids and play some part, good or bad, in their upbringing. So yeah, that's about it. You know, we've got, at the moment, we only have three dogs. We tend to find strays or adopt rescues that other people won't adopt.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We've got, we adopt them, they age out, we lose them, we adopt some more. That's kind of what we do around here.
Oh, good. And, good.
So we've got three knucklehead dogs right now. And it's never dull. Let's just put it this way.
You know, when
it's never dull around here.
It's interesting because when you get more than one dog, you start seeing the personality of the dogs, how they really are, not when they're so totally tied to their human, but when they get a little pack, whether it's one other dog or two others, they have completely different personalities. You know, so the way they interact, sometimes they're aggressive with each other, other times they're not. Yeah, I'm a dog person, so what can I say?
We love them. And they are. They're completely different personality-wise. Yeah. One, not our most recent. The one we got just before our most recent is a pit bull mix. And she'd been caught, captured, running the streets of Tucson. Emaciated, starving to death, and pregnant. And so she's feral for all intents and purposes and terrified of everything. And we ended up, my wife found her on a website. She was actually up in Prescott at the Chino Valley Animal Shelter. And we found her up there. She needs a lot of work and still needs a lot of work, but she's a wonderful dog. And then when we got the most recent member of the family, he's also a pit bull mix, and he's just overweening in confidence. He's a sweet, sweet, sweet dog, and he's really helped bring her out of her shell some too, just by being around her. So I know what you mean by the interaction and how they can take care of one another and entertain us.
Well, when one dog is not fearful of the humans, has a way of rubbing off on those that are afraid, that haven't been treated well by people. So, yeah, good.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so let's talk about Angel. You gave us a draft version, a draft studio version. Tell us about this song.
Oh, this is just about how there's a little bit of Angel in everyone. regardless of how they may present to the world. You know, they might be a little rough out on the outside, or they might be scary looking, or they might be they just might not be what you would typically associate with the physical visage of an angel. And my premise in this song is that I would prefer my angels to be a little more experienced and maybe have seen some stuff, and maybe they're not afraid of mixing it up down here with us mortals, you know, and maybe they look at us as a challenge. And I want those guys on my team, those angels on my team, regardless of how they look and how they act. So that's sort of where it came from. And okay. It's based on a couple of people that I know that are definitely angels, but you would not suspect they were by looking at them or listening to them.
An angel whose wings are actually tattooed instead of pristine.
Mm-hmm.
There right. You go. There he goes. Let's listen to this. This is called Angel.
To wear white and have a halo and silver wings. Can't they be clad in brown or plaid or navy blue and be full of piss and vinegar too, just like you and me? Who decided that angels have to fly? I bet some trip and skin their knees. I'm sure there are some clumsy ones out there. Not everyone receives an equal share of elegance and grace. I prefer me an angel with a big old bag of tools. One who's a little rough around the edges. Some feathers missing from her wings tells me she's not afraid of things here on the ground. I prefer me an angel with some dirt under her nails. One who feels at home here in the trenches. Them smudges on her cheeks say she won't shy from the dirty work of saving. Some angels make the starting nine, some languish on the bench. Some never even make the team and have to be content to dream of being in the game. Are these hapless ones any less a blessing to us down here on the field? Where we're running round like fools, trying to learn the rules, worrying about the things we'll leave behind. I prefer me an angel who's traveled the long road, where lumps and bones. Feathers missing from her wings tells me she's not afraid of things here on the ground. Yeah, I'm gonna need me an angel with some red clay on her boots, who won't be run off by a little misadventure. Them smudges on her cheeks say she won't shy from the dirty work of saving me. Should never travel any faster than your angels can fly. Make no unexpected turns, at least until your angel learns what it takes to stay right by your side. and an angel who shares a little common ground. Mine keep quitting me. I've gone through two or three, and I'm not sure there are many more left around. I'm gonna need me an angel with a big old bag of tools. One who's a little rough around the edges. Some feathers missing from her wings. Tells me she's not afraid of things here on the ground. On her cheeks, say she won't shy from the dirty work of saving me. Saving me. Saving me.
Amazing song. You write really good songs, and this song is identifiable. This is more country than the other two. This has definitely got the country vibe to it.
It's got a little bit of that, to me anyway, a little bit of that sort of early Eagles.
Sure does.
Thing. Yep. I mean, that's I'm not trying to compare myself to Don Henley.
No, it's okay. Well, it has a Timothy B. Schmidt sort of sound to it when he sings.
Yeah. Well, that's high praise indeed.
Yeah, he's sort of a, I mean, he's got a cult following all of his own. He's such an amazing bass player and vocalist. But he has a few songs he does with the Eagles, and this song, you could easily see him doing a song like this. So, yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. All of it. All three songs, Did You Ever, Cocoon, and Angel. And so this is the studio draft version. Is this kind of a final version?
It's pretty close, yeah. Yeah. I haven't been able, actually, since we spoke last, I haven't been able to get into the studio because I've been traveling. But I think there are a couple of things I'd like to clean up on it a little bit, but essentially I think it's done.
I can't imagine where.
Well, there's a little bit of a clam in the lap steel in the last verse there somewhere that I'm not. It kind of makes me go, you know. But no one else has noticed it. So
no,
some point you have to let it go anyway, yeah. Right?
Right, and you know sometimes the little idiosyncrasies, the less than perfect takes, are what make a song great.
Oh man! Well, then I'm all over that stuff. That's the perfect parts.
I should have been a megastar decades ago, based on that. So maybe that's not completely true.
I think what you've just done has given me a good way to categorize my music.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what my music's like. Well, you know, it's not perfect.
Yeah. Gee, that's kind of an angry song, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, when I think back at that was a seminal moment for me. Anyway, so I think that brings us kind of to the end here. What do you have anything you want to leave your fans with before we sign off today?
Sure. Well, I would like to thank you, Tim, for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, completely.
And thank you for doing what you do for independent artists and the music, you know? I mean, you know, being a musician yourself, how difficult it is to get yourself in front of people that would never hear of you otherwise. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate this opportunity, and I'm sure everyone does. I hope you hear our thanks loudly and often, because it really is a special thing that you do for all of us.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, a few others are very gracious to say that I think you guys are doing me the solid by even agreeing to be interviewed, because this music is really good. And you're part of a growing, expanding group of people that are finally having a voice in the music industry. And I think the industry itself overall is starting to feel it. They just haven't quite figured out what group it is that's causing them, you know, to not be able to sign people because they're doing their thing like this. So,
right.
Very good.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed that it keeps going that direction. And I also like to give a shout out to Josie Bello. She's a wonderful singer, songwriter,
she
musician.
Is.
And I hope we actually get to meet in person sometime. We've only met each other virtually. But I'm a huge fan of her and her music. And also Linda Sussman, whom I've not met. But she also, I think, she and Josie do podcasts together.
They do.
She may have played some part in getting us together, too.
Yeah, I watched their video podcast the other day. It was a lot of fun. And they had a guest on, Rory Kelly. I've interviewed all of them. It was like old home week for me.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So now, who knows, maybe next month they'll have their podcast and feature Eric Ramsey.
Well, I'm actually scheduled for them, I think, sometime in October, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I'd have to look at my calendar. I'll probably screw that up, too, somehow. Be late for that, but I'll try not to.
Well, better late than not here at all, right?
It's very true.
Okay, Eric, I had a wonderful time. Thanks for being with us on Local Open Mic, and we'll be sure to put all your contact information that we have in the show notes so people can find you. I know I'm a fan, so I'm hoping they will be too. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tim. Thanks for all you do.
And that concludes our interview with Eric Ramsey. What a wonderful person. And his songs are great, aren't they? We're glad Eric joined us for the first episode of Season 3. We have all his contact information in the show notes, so be sure to check them. His email address, his website, ericramsey.net, will also have all his contact information. You can find him on Facebook, Instagram, and of course, Spotify. I'm your host, Tim Heath, for the Local Open Mic Podcast. Remember, get up on the stage, step up to the microphone. The world is listening.